Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. We want to talk today about the winners of the Victoire Ingabire Umahoza Prize for Democracy and Peace. This prize was given, I think, on the 19th of June. It's a very important prize, and it's a wonderful initiative. So we want to talk about that. Later, we're going to talk somewhat about the Meng Wanzhou case. We want Meng Wanzhou to be, her case to be dropped and for her to be sent back to, permitted to go home, that this farce has gone far enough. It's all being done on behalf of the United States, you know, so that they can wage a trade war. We'll get into that more. And we're also going to talk to, once again, to Tony Leah of Local 222 in Oshawa, General Motors, and he's a Unifor retiree. There's been important development at the Canadian Labor Congress. We talked about that last week, but we have to do a follow-up because we took up the issue of what the new leadership and what happens to old veteran leaders of the CLC, and we're going to have to talk about that. So those are some of the matters. There'll be additional ones. Maybe we'll talk about Mr. President Duterte of the Philippines, who has taken a courageous stand in our view in opposition to the so-called International Criminal Court, which is seeking to destabilize his government and to help the United States in an exercise to overthrow him, but we'll talk about that. First of all, the winners of the Victoire Ingabire Umahoza Prize for Democracy and Peace are Mukashima Hope, and she is a director and host of Radio RTV Ubomwe, eyewitness and survivor of the genocide against the Tutsis and massacres that killed her husband and son in April 1994. Second prize winner, additional prize winner is Masako Yonakawa. She is a professor at Tsukuba Gakuin University, co-representative of the Japanese nonprofit organization Rita-Congo, researcher on refugee issues, peace, and conflicts in the Great Lakes region in Africa. The third of the three winners, they share this prize, is Marie Beatrice Umatizi. She is a survivor of the massacres of Hutu refugees in Zaire, 1996-1997, and she's the author of Live or Die in Zaire, The Experiences of a Rwandan Refugee, published in 2000. She has graduated in sociology and is a refugee living in Belgium. We're very fortunate to have the speech delivered by Masako Yonakawa, and we want to read that today on the Taylor Report because next Monday following this, Masako Yonakawa is going to be our guest on the Taylor Report. So this is the speech, and it is acceptance speech on the occasion of the award of the Victoire Ingabire Prize for Democracy and Peace, June 2021. I would like to thank the International Women's Network for Democracy and Peace, honoring me with this special award, Victoire Ingabire Umahoza Prize for Democracy and Peace. To be honest, I am not sure whether I truly deserve this prize, but if I do, it is thanks to the so many dedicated and respectable people whom I met with and who enormously inspired me. Let me tell you who these people are. First and foremost, the victims of genocide and war in the Great Lakes region, including refugees, internally displaced persons, survivors of sexual violence, both women and men, and survivors of other serious human rights violations. I will tell you more about the refugees later. Second, the past laureates of this award, many whom I have been in touch with in order to reinforce our research and advocacy. Third, Dr. Dennis Mukwege, I don't need to tell you who he is, obviously, who has been raising especially the United Nations mapping report, which seems to be taboo for the so-called international community, and remains a very strong advocate for democracy, justice, and peace, as well as women's rights worldwide. Fourth, the late Barbara Harrell Bond, the founding director of Refugee Studies Center at Oxford University. Her organization was the only organization worldwide which opposed to the invocation of cessation clause of Rwandan refugees. And she introduced me to lots of refugees and non-refugees and supported and advised my research and advocacy. And last but not least, Madam Victoire Ingabire, of course, unfortunately, I have never met her in person, but she has become my hopeful hero ever since she made that famous and historical speech in 2010 in front of Kigali's genocide memorial about the need to commemorate both Hutu and Tutsi victims. Since then, I have been writing some articles in Japanese about her courage, her leadership, and her moral strength. Now, let me talk about refugees, as tomorrow, June 20, is World Refugee Day. In particular, I would like to talk about Rwanda refugees together with Victoire's important contribution. Why do I focus on Rwandan refugees? It is because the so-called international community tends to connect Rwanda with genocide and genocide victims, which is understandable. But the same actor has forgotten or ignored, intentionally or otherwise, the presence of Rwandan refugees and their testimonials. We are fully aware that from 1990 to 1997, that is prior to and in the aftermath of genocide, massive forced movement inside and out of the country took place repeatedly. This movement was not a collateral effect, but it was planned and it was used as a political and economic strategy by many forces so that the RPF can seize power. This fact has been totally sidelined. For my research on Rwandan refugees, I met about 90 of them in three continents. What really impressed me was their attitude, their wise and non-violent struggle, their hard-working characteristics, and their eagerness in pursuing higher education, even in an unstable environment. To my knowledge, Rwandan refugees have written and published more number of books than any other refugees from Africa or other continents. I have read many of them, and I believe that this fact, Rwandan refugees shared their testimonies, including their criticisms of Rwandan government, shows their strong commitment in truth-telling, reconciliation, and peace. These refugees should deserve more recognition and attention worldwide, just like Victoire's crucial contribution. While I have been impressed with Rwandan refugee strength, I was also shocked with one fact among the many. That is, many Rwandans have become used to being refugees. I noticed this when I first worked in Rwanda in 1995 with the UNHCR. Many of my Rwandan colleagues were former refugees, and even some people who remained in the country had many relatives who were refugees. The same phenomenon continues today not only in Rwanda, but also in the Democratic Republic of Congo and Burundi. This is not only a sad reality, but this is abnormal. This is not acceptable, because nobody on earth should leave their homes against their will. As you all know, Great Lakes region is a beautiful heaven. Who on earth wishes to abandon those areas? Not only that, many Rwandan refugees' talent, capacity, and intelligence is not well utilized in the countries of asylum, just because they are considered as outsiders. If they remained in their own country, they could have enormously contributed for the country's development. This is simply a waste of human capital. However, many governments and international organizations apparently consider refugee flow in general as natural phenomena and discuss how to assist, protect, and settle refugees. The same actors apparently are not so interested in solving the root causes of refugee flows. That is persecution, human rights violation, and conflict. Yes, they talk about it, but only in general manner, without pursuing and punishing the responsible actors for this forced displacement, who are mostly the governments. The government in Rwanda and in the Great Lakes region have been harassing, torturing, and massacring people. Yet foreign governments, including donor countries and international organizations, just keep silent. We seriously have to stop these crimes, and we have to change the general perception of refugees. This is why we need trustful and sincere leaders like Victoire Ingabire, who has been fighting for the democracy, peace, and human rights for all the people, all the people. If democracy and peace were there in Rwanda and the whole Great Lakes region, then refugee flow would not have taken place in the first place. With this award honored to me, I promise that I will continue to maintain Victoire's spirits and enhance my research and advocacy together with all of you. Thank you once again. That is the speech of Masako Nakawa on June 19th, receiving the Victoire Ingabire Prize for Democracy and Peace. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM, and I remind you that Masako will be our guest. Pardon me, I think a door closed. She will be our guest next Monday on the Taylor Report. Now, we have many other matters we want to take up. First of all, I want to just say election season is drifting our way. We're being warned. It's kind of like we had the pandemic and now we're going to have the election. By the way, I hope the election is what it should be, a kind of referendum on really ugly failures by powerful people. The biggest failure, in my view, is that the deception of the current Liberal government. I remind listeners that Justin Trudeau ran in his for election saying, and I guess he's been through a re-election now, anyway. Secondly, he came in to be prime minister saying he was going to follow a new track internationally. He was going to restore and improve relations with Russia. He was going to repair and improve relations with the People's Republic of China. He was not going to be a vassal to the Americans. Well, he ran as Trudeau, and he served as Harper. And we seem to have this problem that the Canadian people were quite comfortable with Trudeau's projected foreign policy, which, frankly, countries are known in the world not by, you know, how much wheat they grow, but there's their foreign policy, how they treat other countries, how they relate to them. I left out, by the way, the Islamic Republic. He also said we're going to improve relations with the Islamic Republic. There's a government to the south of us, you may not know its name, it's called the United States. They actually don't want to improve relations with Russia. They don't want to improve relations with China. And they are trying to smash the government of the Islamic Republic. Which brings us to Meng Wanzhou. Meng Wanzhou should be released now. She is a businesswoman from China who broke no laws in Canada. She contributes mightily to the Canadian economy and offered technology which would put Canada in the first rank in the 5G, as though I know what I'm talking about, the 5G group, the technology breakthrough. China's quite, and Huawei, the company of Meng Wanzhou, where she's the chief financial officer. We've disrupted her life and her career. She's a very necessary part of an important business that does business in China and all over the world and is a respected country. And no one has ever brought these ignorant, insidious, nasty smear charges that have emanated from the United States. She was apprehended at an airport in British Columbia at the behest of the Trump government. The Trump government. Trump is so disliked and so repudiated in American liberal political circles that he's not permitted to have Facebook or Twitter. He's a former president of the United States. And matter of fact, while still being the sitting president, these rights are taken away from him. So that's how deeply he is disliked, and how people are seem to be unanimous that he is willful, behaved like a pirate, arrogant, all these things. Well, it was his government that wanted to capture Meng Wanzhou. It was the sitting president of the United States who blew the case sky high by saying that he'd be willing to trade her to get a trade deal, which means the case has to be thrown out. And if you're the sitting government of Canada, hearing the president of the United States say that she's basically a bargaining chip, and this president is an obnoxious SOB, according to everybody, therefore, pull up your short pants, put on your shoes as a Canadian government, and say, we are releasing her. She has broken no law in Canada, and the one who has wanted us to hold her is being chased for crimes he committed while in office, and he also said she was a bargaining chip. She has to go home post haste. It has nothing to do with the Huawei. She as a person, President Xi of China, has nothing to do with any of that. This has to do with self-respect. It has to do with honor. That is an old word. You don't do dishonorable things. The Canadian border people were dishonorable. They connived in her apprehension. She wasn't in Canada when they got the word that the United States had been spying on her and knew of her movements, Chinese national, not an American. And they knew she was going to catch a plane, and they told the Canadians to get ready to nab her. She hadn't broken any Canadian laws. We have, all this does is focus the question. Does Canada want to be part of a multilateral trading world, or does it want to be the water boy for the G7 and just do, and when I say G7, G7 has one boss. His name is Biden today. It used to be Trump, once was Obama, but the Americans are the boss. They're not in favor of multilateral trade. But Trudeau said he was. Trudeau was in favor of developing relations with the most rapidly developing country on Earth. Far and away the most rapidly developing country, which represents trade, business, a chance for mutual prosperity. But we're told no, no, Uncle doesn't want that. So we enter vassalage. So, and so long as Meng Wanzhou is held by Canadians for an American president, the country is a vassal. It's indisputable, a vassal. And Canadians don't like it. It's very clear. I mean, polls have been taken. We talk. America says it's leading the civilized, or they call themselves the democratic, freedom-loving, et cetera, world. Polls now, and we're not talking about polls taken by Russia or China, but polls taken by reputable centers in UK, Canada, and the United States. And it turns out that at the top of the list of the least trusted countries on Earth, and this is polling taken in various places of the world, including Canada, the least trusted country is the United States. So that's the background for this. We're going to have an election, and any self-respecting Canadian seeking office should say that they would, if their party were to win, they would close the book of the Meng Wanzhou case and return her. By the way, with no questions asked, it has nothing to do with what will you give me back. When you do the wrong thing, the only way to correct it is do the right thing. You don't say, oh, I've got to talk to my lawyer and see if I can get something out of this. If you do the wrong thing, correct it. Just correct it. And I don't mean apologize. Trudeau's good at that. No, 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 not correct it. She has to be sent home. She is a prisoner. More on it, it's 960 some days. People say, oh, she lives in a nice house. In Canada, her home is in China. She has a job. To say, oh, she has a nice home, has got nothing. Again, this is somewhat demoralizing. It's a terrible commentary on the people who write for the Globe and the Star and Sun, the cretins who say, it's not as bad as jail. You're holding somebody who didn't commit a crime, and you're doing it for Donald Trump, and he isn't in office anymore. And because Biden can't make up his mind and thinks that he has all day about this, and you go through a Canadian court exercise. You have a prime minister, let him make the decision. You're saying this over and over. We have to confront the Canadian in Canadian politics and define the political character of Canada and remind everybody that we were told we were going to have a prime minister who was going to follow the line of Jean Chrétien. It was the Chrétien people who campaigned and made Justin look good. And then he threw them all out, and we got Chrystia Freeland, whose joy in life is making America look good. So this is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM.